Hello, everybody. It's Joanna. Welcome, welcome, welcome. I am so glad you're here today for our Befriend Your Fear Part 1 call. We've got Part 1 today. And then next week, you'll get a recording as a continuation of the Befriend Your Fear process. It'll be Part 2. I was about to say this is one of my favorite calls, but they're all one of my favorite calls. So, but what I will say is it's another big call today. We're going to do a lot, and we're going to learn a lot and move through a lot. So I'm just so, so excited to be with all of you. And if you've been moving through the Your Sacred Business modules, today's call and next week's, you know, is a take on one of the Befriend Your Marketing Fear module on there, but we're going to be going way, way deeper to understand all of the interpinnings and underpinnings and, you know, all of that. So even if you've listened to those recordings, even if you've listened to them recently, open your ears today. There's a lot that you'll be able to receive. One housekeeping piece that I wanted to mention before we jump in to the work today. For those of you that are going for certification, so first of all, just a friendly reminder to be keeping up with worksheets and with buddy hours and practice hours and all of that. I haven't mentioned that in a while, so I just wanted to remind you. And then the other piece is that I know that some of you who are going for the Sacred Depth Certification have already started to work on your 5 sessions with your one-on-one Sacred Depths coach. And I know that some of you haven't yet started. If you haven't yet started, no worries. You still have time. For sure, but I just wanted to encourage you to go ahead and set up those calls. You know, I know that there can sometimes be a little bit of resistance around setting up those calls. You don't know who the coach is. You know who I am, but who is Joanna sending me to? You know, it's a little bit more manufactured in a way than if you were to just hire a coach, right? So I totally get that there can be some obstacles and blocks to doing it. But it is a part, as you know, of the certification process. It will really give you an opportunity to not only get coached in the Sacred Depths way, but to have the skills modeled for you. And if you have any questions on that, you know, you can just send me a note, you know, any concerns, anything like that, just let me know. All right. So, all that being said, let's jump in. So, the first thing that I want us to really take a look at is to understand this, the full module as a whole. So in our last call, as I mentioned, we've got through all of the basics, and now starting in our last call, we're moving from the foundational pieces into really some of the advanced techniques and into the places that are kind of the hardest in some ways as a coach. For the next few months, all the different classes that we're having are all geared towards really helping our clients when they get stuck, really helping our clients when they go into fear and they're not moving forward, or when they're sabotaging themselves, or when they just keep on hitting these patterns. And last week, when we looked at resistance archetypes, we looked at the types of obstacles that really bring the coaching itself to a halt. Last week's class was about getting your client out of the energetic hold of a resistance archetype, that unconscious need to sabotage the coaching and the coaching relationship itself. Last week's call was about how to get the green light for you as the coach to get the green light to even look at the underlying fears that some clients, because some clients are going to react to their fears by unconsciously working against the coaching relationship itself. So last week was all about getting that green light if the fears are causing these resistances to the coaching relationship itself. But the work doesn't end there. Once you've gotten the green light to consciously look at the fears instead of just having them fester and corrode the coaching relationship, then the next step is to help your client befriend the fear. So today's call is like the next step after working with the resistance archetype, but also, sometimes the resistance archetype isn't going to show up because the client at least has enough awareness to not unconsciously put a stop to the coaching relationship itself or throw a monkey wrench into the coaching. It's just going to be about, okay, let's take a look at the fears, right? So today's call, today and tomorrow, next week's call on befriending your fear are about both of those things. But I just wanted you to be able to see the continuum there. And then there's even more continuum as we go through this larger module, because after Befriend Your Fears, we're going to be looking at rewiring negative thought patterns. Sometimes that needs to happen after you've made friends with the fear. So today's call, I'm going to be giving you an overview of the entire process. I'm going to be getting into the human behavior issues that can come up with fear, just so you understand all of the pieces. And then next week's call is about going deeper into each of the six steps of the process and allowing you to experience step by step and give you the tools that you need to lead your clients through. So all of this is to say that oftentimes, and you know I've said this before, but I want to mention this again here. Oftentimes, the process of change is, well, a process, right? So it might sound like, oh my gosh, first we have to do the resistance archetypes, if there's resistance archetypes there, and then befriending the fear, and then there might be negative thought pattern work to do, like, oh, this is so much. But the truth is that if you're really going to do some of the deeper work, if you're really going to work to change some of the long-standing patterns, you know, sometimes it can all change in an instant for sure, but most of the time it's a process. It's not once and done. And, you know, I won't get on my soapbox for too long on this, but it's important for me to mention this as we go into this call. You know that one of the things about the transformation industry and about social media right now that actually makes me so angry and so frustrated is that the industry and what people post on social media oftentimes trick consumers into thinking that we don't have to work for our results, right? That it's just like once and done, overnight success. And, you know, we all know that that's actually BS. One of the quickest ways to go down real quickly as a coach is to join your client in the limiting belief that change is always going to happen in an instant. It's going to cause frustration, it's going to cause anxiety, it's going to cause all sorts of self-judgment and judgment of the client. So again, while it's absolutely true that sometimes a quantum leap can happen in a moment, in my experience, like, change oftentimes happens over time and with work. And even for the quantum leaps, like if I'm going to just be totally honest, even the quantum leaps themselves, when they happen or seem to happen in an instant, they weren't actually quantum leaps that happened in an instant. It's because there was already a history of awareness, right? Small little things that had been working up to that point, almost like a domino effect. And when the quantum leap seemed to happen, it was actually just the last domino, right? Okay. So just for now, as a way for you to look at this a little bit more for yourself, and I know we've been working on this. This is the first time I've mentioned this, but I just want you to ask yourself for a moment, what's your natural rate of true change and transformation? Are you a quick transformer, or are you a little bit slower? Does it, you know, have ebbs and flows? What's your natural rate of true change and transformation? You know, I can tell you for myself, my natural rate of action, like I'm a big action taker, I'll take actions, that's quick. But that actually for me to like change the underlying patterns so that the action feels easy and I'm not so conflicted about the new action, that takes much longer for me. Personally, right? But so for you, and each one of us is different, what's your natural rate of true change and transformation? And if you look, next question, if you just take a look honestly at your clients, if you don't have clients, you think about your ideal client, or even your friends, people that you know, what typically for your clients or the people around you, what's their natural rate of true change and transformation? Are you someone that attracts quick people that change quick, or people that they have to work at it? Have you just take an honest look at that? And then last question on this, what are the judgments that you have had, either about yourself, your ability as a coach or a healer, a practitioner, or the judgments that you've had about others, about clients, when it comes to rate of change and growth? Just so that you can identify and see for yourself, what are some of the judgments that you've had? Again, the reason why I bring this up here as we move into the befriend your fear process is because if you're going to execute the process effectively, it's important to be open to the idea that change is a process. Let's pause here briefly. I'd love to hear one or two shares. What are you hearing for yourself so far that's important for you? What are you seeing here that's important for you? Star two. Let's see. Uh-oh, my computer's being a little slow. Oh, here we go. Kelsey.
Hi, Joanna. So just quickly, I know that over time I've learned to be more compassionate with myself and others about the slower rate of change. Some of the things that I've been able to change more quickly, or that some of my clients have been able to change more quickly, are kind of the superficial habits, like the quick awarenesses. Like, yep. Oh, if I don't look at my phone before bed, I sleep better. Like, I can kind of make that change right away.
Yeah.
Or, you know, a diet or lifestyle thing. But the deeper work that we're talking about here and the deeper work that I've experienced with certain coaches, I actually did Kara's story work coaching last year, and I realized that it took me much longer than the allotted time we had to really embody my story. I had to take like almost a 6 month or 8 month break from it and come back to it, because the really deep stuff that's been there a long time, that's harder to look at, takes so much longer.
Yeah. Yeah. And we can have a tendency to be like, oh, it should have happened already. I should be able to look at it. I should be able to embody, you know, all of that.
Right. Why can't I write this story? Yeah.
Right. And sometimes it is about butt kicking, right? Like kicking our own butts or having the coach kick our butt for sure. But other times it's really just part of that natural process that needs to evolve and unfold.
Yeah. Yeah, like actually, like on a metaphysical level, like over the 6 months where I like couldn't do the work that I had to, that I was supposed to do around this story stuff, I like had dreams that were working out. I actually ran into my ex-husband for the first time in 15 years. It was like all this stuff had to happen in the physical plane over time. That just is a much slower, deeper transformation. And there's no way I could have forced it any quicker.
Yes. Yeah, good. I'm so glad you're sharing all of that. Thank you. And, you know, one of the important points here for everybody is, always go back to this, energy follows energy, right? So if you are really grounded in this fact that you're doing great work, that that shifts and growth is happening on those many levels, but also that there's some growth that takes longer, then when your client gets frustrated, which inevitably some will, about things may not be happening fast enough, or why do I keep on going back to this, or why, then you are able to really hold a much stronger and powerful and effective leadership position in that container and trust the process, as opposed to, freaking out with your client. Okay, so let's talk about befriending your fear specifically. So I developed the term and the concept of befriending your fear after many, many, many encounters and experiences with both my own fear as well as that of hundreds of clients. And the way that I talk about fear is really different than most of the talk that you'll see in the coaching industry about fear. This isn't about conquering your fears. This isn't about slaying your fears. This isn't about destroying your fears. And it's not even about letting your fears go. It's actually not even about that either. This is about becoming friends with your fears. It's a totally different concept. It's like on a whole different stratosphere, really, than the slaying your fear and the destroying your fears and the fighting your fears. It's so important to befriend your fears, because if you ignore or avoid your fears or fight against them, they're going to sabotage you and your desire to move forward. I'm going to say that again because it's so important. When you ignore or avoid or fight your fears, they can sabotage you and stand in your way of success. So fear can rear its head in so many ways, right? Some examples include not taking consistent action forward on goals, not preparing enough. Maybe you have clients that don't prepare enough for an interview, for a presentation, a dinner party, whatever it is, not following up on important leads, deciding to lower your rates, putting off your most important tasks, putting off having important conversations that will allow you to create what you want, right? On and on and on. So what we're going to do in today's training is learn how to help your clients get very clear on what their fears are, to get really clear on how the fears function in their life, where they come from, and then learn tools on how to move forward with their fears so that they can ultimately, again, not slay the fears, but work to prevent the fears from getting in the way of achieving their inner and outer goals. So this is about learning how to really work with fears, instead of having the fears manage and control and sabotage. And the only way that you can work with fears, that your clients can work with their fears, is if you make friends with them so that you can work together with them. Right? How can you best work with something? If you're friends with it or not, most of the time if you're friends with it. So here's the next thing that's really important to know about fear. Fear is normal. It is 100% common and normal and honestly expected. Like, I expect that some sort of fear is going to rear its head when a client is about to, like, really step into something much bigger or different for herself. I expect it's going to come up when I'm about to do that, too. That's because when you step into something bigger for yourself, the fear is part of the process most of the time, of leveling up and of expansion. It's just part of the process sometimes. Sometimes it's not there, and that's awesome. But for a lot of our clients, that there's going to be fear that's part of the process. And here's the thing that's so important to know about it. Not only is it normal, and not only is it a natural part of the process, but there's nothing at all wrong with it. And what I mean by that is, if you experience fear when you pursue something that you want, it doesn't mean that you can't have the thing that you want. It doesn't mean that you're not going to achieve the thing that you want. It just means that there's some fear there. But what oftentimes happens is that either we make the fear bad or wrong, right? And that's when we can't be friends with it. Or you may not recognize the fear as a fear. Instead, you just see the fear as like, ugh, I have this obstacle. I can't achieve my goal. But, and probably if you're, you know, if you're a participant in this course, you probably do recognize your fear as a fear. But oftentimes our clients don't. It's just they're going to see the thing as it is. Like, I just can't prepare for my presentations on time. I just can't raise my rates. I just can't get into a romantic relationship that's good for me. So in other words, they can't separate the fear from the goal itself. Or they think that the fear is a foregone conclusion, like the fear is already going to dictate the conclusion. So for example, I'm scared that I'm not going to be a good enough acupuncturist, so that means that I'm not meant to pursue acupuncture. Or I'm scared to charge that much for my services, so I guess I can't ever make the amount of money that I want. So again, it's important to understand that just because you're scared of an outcome doesn't mean that the outcome is true. Sometimes our clients forget that. And so that leads us to the next really important concept around fear, which is there's always something to risk. So when we create a big goal for ourselves, when we step into a bigger place for ourselves, there's usually always something to risk. It's very, very, very rare to go to have a goal where there's not something to risk. When you go after a dream or a goal, there's always a relationship that might be at risk. A held might be at risk. A value that might be at risk, an object that might be at risk, an issue that might be at risk, or an idea about yourself or your identity that might be at risk. You can think of it like jumping off of a cliff. If you're at the edge of the cliff and you know that across the chasm, you know, on the other edge, if you can make it to the other side, that's where your goal is, right? That's where the bigger place for you is. That's where what you want is. But in order to get to that, you know, get there, you have to take a risk. You have to make the leap and risk falling, risk losing something in order to get to the other side. When you make the commitment to go after a goal and to take the leap, sometimes it's a big leap if it's a big goal, but even if it's a small goal, there's still a leap involved. When you make the commitment to go after a goal, to take the jump, that's usually when the fear comes up. Or when you think about making the commitment. Because when you consider taking the jump, right, when you consider going after that thing that you want, there's a part of you that recognizes that there's something at risk as well. So that leads us to the next piece that's important to know here, which is that in a certain way, your ego likes to be comfortable. So many of you probably know this, but it's important to understand it in the context of fear and taking risks. Your ego, which is the part of yourself that likes to think that where you are right now is safe and comfortable, is always going to feel like the risk is so big for you to move forward. Again, your ego likes to think that where you are right now is the safest and most comfortable place. So it's not going to be happy when faced with the risk. So, again, we go back to this idea that in order to create what you want, in order to manifest what you want, in order to pursue what you want, you have to make a move from where you are right now to get what you want. And in order to move from where you are right now, you have to be willing to give up where you are right now. I'm going to say that again. In order to be able to move from where you are right now, you have to be willing to give up where you are right now. But oftentimes the ego feels like where you are right now is the safest place to be. even if you don't like where you are right now, even if there's a part of you that hates your current career situation or financial situation or romantic situation, your ego, in a way, finds it comfortable and safe. So you can think of it this way. This is just a very kind of like simple metaphor, but I think you'll get it. Let's say you're sitting on the couch in your living room and you're really in the mood for chocolate or ice cream, and the chocolate or the ice cream is in the refrigerator, and you know you want it, like you know you want that ice cream. Well, in order to stand up and start walking and get to the kitchen, you have to be willing to give up the experience of sitting on the couch, or at least temporarily give up that experience. You can't have both experiences at the same time, the experience of sitting on the couch as well as the experience of going for the ice cream. You can't have both. Anytime you come to a fork in the road, you have to make a choice about which way to go, even if you know that going to the left is the absolute right choice for you. You still have to come to terms with making the choice not to go to the right and losing whatever lays on the path towards the right side, or to make the choice to just not move from where you are now, right, the known. If you can't come to terms with that choice, then you either remain stuck where you are or you end up taking the road that isn't right for you. So again, there's always something to risk, no matter what you're working to achieve. And your ego generally doesn't like risk. So the ego wants to keep you in your safety zone because your safety zone might not be what feels great, but at least you know what it is. At least you're familiar with it. The ego is almost always going to choose the familiar over the new. And so often, we give up or we sabotage having what we really want in order to be able to hold on to the safety and the security of the familiar, right? We may not realize that that's what's happening, but that's what's happening. You know, a great example in our clinic call yesterday for level two, somebody, you know, brought up this question of a client who, you know, needs to raise her rates, probably wants to raise her rates, but is having a lot of trouble raising her rates. Well, a big piece of that is the ego's need to hold on to the safety and the security of the familiar. But let's just talk honestly for a moment about safety and security. The thought that we can do something in order to remain safe and secure, the thought that we can do anything, really, in order to remain safe and secure, is a lie that we tell ourselves to trick ourselves into thinking that we're always going to be safe and secure. Now, I don't mean to say that we're not safe, right? That's not, or that things aren't okay. That's not my point. But my point is that whether you make choices or not, life is always changing. There are always risks. In order to, like, be alive, we're always moving, we're always growing, we're always changing. We don't know what the future holds. Our ego likes to trick us into thinking if we just stay here with what we know, then we know what the future is going to bring. But the truth is that we're all in the mystery. There's never full security. There's no guarantees about anything. Not about our health, not about our relationships, not about our homes, not about our businesses, not about our bank accounts. Again, I don't mean this in a negative way, but the moment we go into this thinking that if I just do this, this, and this thing, that I'm going to be secure, or if I just say this, this, and this way, then I'm going to be secure, and I'm not going to, you know, I'm not going to risk anything, that's when we, number one, we're tricking ourselves, but that's when we stop being alive. Really, part of the beauty of being alive is being able and willing to risk. It's knowing that anything can happen. It's scary, but it's also amazing. And I really believe that this is part of our work as coaches and practitioners and healers, is to help our clients become more and more comfortable with taking risks. Not recklessly, right? But risks are part of the pathway to success in anything. It's such a risk to decide to get married, for example, or to decide to have a baby or buy a home or start a business or raise your, whatever it is. So if you're like me and you are a student of the cycles of the earth, you can think about this cycle of risk and change and movement in terms of the cycle of the earth. Think about the trees in autumn, how they have these beautiful, colorful leaves on them. In order for the trees to be able to blossom again in the spring, to be able to bear delicious fruit in the next cycle, in the next summer, the trees have to be willing to let go of those beautiful, vibrant leaves in the autumn. They have to be willing to risk, to face the fear of the bareness that's going to come before they get to the spring. There's no way that they can get to the spring, to the new cycle, to the next goal, without shedding, without risking. Mother Nature, I think, really teaches us so deeply and profoundly the lesson of overcoming fear, of giving permission to risk. So I know I'm talking a lot. I want to share one more concept, and then I'll open up for reflections and questions. The next concept that I want to share, it's one that you've probably heard before. There's a great acronym for the word fear. It's false evidence appearing real. False evidence appearing real. So what that means is that when you go into a place of fear, you're actually looking for, searching for, and even maybe without realizing it, bending some facts to find evidence in any little experience, big experience, scenario, email, glance, etc., that's going to confirm your fear. When you go into fear, you're looking for evidence to confirm the fear. But the evidence isn't real. It's false. It's just that your ego is looking for a confirmation of what it's afraid of, so it makes the evidence real, right? Back to that example from the call yesterday about, you know, if I raise my rates, then I'm not going to have the same business that I have now. I'm not going to have clients. Okay, there's part of that that might be true. Like, definitely the clients may change, and who they are may change if you raise your rates. But it's not true that the clients aren't going to be there. And just that the ego is looking for false evidence and making it real. So, again, a big component of befriending your fear is, number one, to just understand all of these foundational principles, the nature of fear, and then to get really connected to the fears, to help your clients face the fears, to see where the fears are coming from, so that you can really just see the fear for what it is. It's not about destroying it. It's about befriending it. And here's why. Whatever you fight becomes stronger. Also, when it comes to fear, not all things in life, but when it comes to fear, usually whatever, if you tend to ignore it, the fear becomes stronger too. It wants to be seen, and it wants to be loved. It wants to be made friends with. So I'll just share here a quick parable that will illustrate this. Some of you may have heard me share this before. It's something that I saw when I was 4 years old on Sesame Street, and it's always stuck with me. It was this great parable. I saw it in like a cartoon form on Sesame Street, and the sun and the wind were having a conversation, and they saw a man walking down the street with a coat, a raincoat, and a hat, and the wind says to the sun, "I bet you I'm stronger than you, sun. I bet you I can get the hat and the coat off the man before you can." And the sun says, "Great, I'm up for the challenge. Let's see who's better at this." And so the wind goes first, and the wind blows and blows and blows. It tries to blow really, really hard, so it just blows the, you know, it's trying to just blow the hat off and the coat off of the man. But what happens instead is that because the wind is so strong and, you know, so fighting the man fights back. He grips onto his hat and grips tightly, even tighter onto his coat. So there's no way those things are going to come off him. And then the sun goes, and the sun has a totally different strategy. The sun's strategy is to just, like, shine. Right, almost like the befriending. It doesn't fight the man. It just gets warm slowly, warmer and warmer and warmer until the man of his own choice gets so warm that he takes off the hat and he takes off the coat. So I always saw this as just such a beautiful metaphor for this idea of fighting fear versus becoming friends with fear. Okay, I've been sharing a lot so far. We still have a lot to cover today, but let's take a pause here for a moment. What's resonating for you so far? What are you starting to see is really important for yourself, for your clients? And also, if you've got any questions, what questions do you have? I'd love to hear a share or two. What are you seeing is important for you? Or how does this relate to you or clients? Tina.
Hi, Joanna.
Hi.
So I definitely identify with this because sometimes fear gets a hold of me in such a strong way just because I'm such a feeler. And so I really love the part about, you know, it's not about, you know, I guess my old self was more like a warrior fighter spirit. And then it does really just backfire with fear. It just, like you said, it feeds it, it gets stronger. And then if we were able to just kind of like soften and hear what it's really just trying to tell us, which is to befriend it, I almost feel like energetically it quiets. Like it's like a child that's having a tantrum. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of how I'm seeing it now. And it's just showing up so much more in my life. And of course, in different parts of my life, like it would for my clients, that it's such a learning curve. And oh my God, I'm like, you know, I'm so action oriented. I just want to be done with it and be like, well, you know, I want to just do it fast. But it's not always like that. Like it is a process. It's a very deep process. So that's something that's really showing up for me lately.
Yeah, yeah, I love it. I love how you articulate all of it, and especially what you're saying about how when you can just be friends with it and not fight it, how it quiets it. It really,
yeah.
really does. Yeah, I've seen it with toddlers as well.
Yeah, so thank you. This is a really important thing.
You're welcome. Good. Who else? I'd love to hear one more share. Kalea.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Hi. So this isn't fully formed into a beautiful thought yet, but there's this, first of all, totally resonating, which probably doesn't surprise you. Mm-hmm. And the thing that I love about the whole process that we're in studying with you is that I'm just realizing so much how my own mastery of things or things I'm fumbling with or things that I'm flowing with really helped me to be a better coach.
Yeah.
And like the fear piece, like, just, and you've helped me through so much of this over the years, but like really getting curious and communicating with it, like not seeing it as like an, oh shit, oh no, not right now kind of thing. It's like,
yeah.
Oh, that's weird. What's going on? Like, and it just happened to me out of the blue yesterday. And what I discovered was that there was a leaky container around this thing that had come up in my mind while I was driving, but it led to this huge epiphany and then movement through it. Like today, you know, like and it was so powerful. And when you were talking about exchanging, you know, these are things that we know, right? Like we know, like we exchange, you know, in order to have a glass of water, we exchange the empty glass for a full glass, mm-hmm. right? And, you know, leaving where you are to get something new, leaving who you are to get something new and be in the newness. And I think it's just so powerful. I'm just appreciating, you know, just listening to you and you know, the parts of me that are saying, oh, that's new and cool, and the parts of me that are like, yeah, like I know that, and hearing it in that way expands my ability to help my clients,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it's so true. So I love all that you just shared, and I want to pull two of the important pieces out of it. First of all, the more that we can understand this for ourselves and our own process, the more that we can really help our clients. And even for those of us that know better, you know, myself included, like when I first am confronted with fear, you know, my first reaction is always to like hate on it or want to get rid of it. You know, it's like even when we know, right? So the more that we can do our own work, it helps so much. And then, yeah, the other piece is that the reason why I'm taking the time to, you know, we haven't even gotten to the process yet, really, but why I'm breaking down each of these pieces, the more we can understand the nature of fear, then the less scared we're going to be when we're confronted, when our clients are being confronted with it, more we'll know what to do.
Yeah, that feels really true. It's such a mastery process, isn't it, within, to be able to be a great coach.
Yeah.
It's not a manual. You have to really
nope.
be able to be within the self.
Yeah.
So anyway, but that's what I wanted to share. Thank
awesome.
You.
Thank you for sharing. Yes, thank you. Okay, good. So let's continue on. One more piece I want to get to before I outline the process for you. And what that piece is I want to share with you the top 11 fears that come up for individuals who are up-leveling any area of their life. And I've articulated these 11 fears basically after many years of seeing it all. And so this isn't a totally exhaustive list, but what you'll see as I go through each of these 11 fears is that pretty much any symptom fear or surface fear can fall into one of these categories. So let me just explain what I mean by that. So I always think of like underlying fears and then symptom or surface fears. So a symptom or surface fear is I'm scared to raise my rates. But that's not the real fear. That fear is just a symptom of an underlying fear. So it's really helpful as coaches and practitioners to just really have on hand for yourself as you work with clients what some of the most common underlying fears are, because it will help you help your clients make connections and connect the dots and see how their different actions or their different symptom fears are related, and it will help you get down deeper into the patterning with them. So as I explain each of these 11 fears, as I just talk about each one a little bit, don't just take notes on them, but I want you to take note on which ones show up for you in your life, which are some of the biggies for you. And if you're working with a coaching partner, take note of what you sense some of the biggies are for your partner. Or if you've got a particular client in mind right now that maybe you're like, oh, I don't know what to do there, or, you know, take note, see if one of these feels right for that client, one or more. Okay, so first underlying fear of failure. We all know this one, right? It can sound something like, I'm simply not going to be able to make this happen, whatever the this is. I'm going to fail. And when there's fear of failure, it's usually not just about the failure itself, but usually the individual is somehow equating failure with their value and their worth, with who they are as a human being. Like it's almost like their value and their worth is predicated on not failing. And if they do, they've lost their value and their worth. Fear number two, fear of not being good enough. Probably most of us know this one. I know this one very well. Can sound like you're not smart enough, you're not savvy enough, that design you created isn't good enough, that coaching session wasn't good enough. This fear can come up around anything not being good enough. And, you know, I would just venture to say that pretty much every human being has this fear inside of themselves in one way or another. It might be, you know, there might be shadow stuff around it, and they come off as cocky, you know, they come off as the opposite, but I've never met anyone that doesn't at least have a tinge of that one. Next fear of not knowing how to do something or not knowing how something is going to work out. So, for example, the fear of not knowing how to market yourself, the fear of not knowing how to talk to a prospect. And, of course, it's important to get the nuts and bolts information about things. It's important for us to know how to do certain things. But when someone has the fear, like truly the fear of not knowing how to do something, it's the fear is running the show. And it's closing off all opportunities even to learn how to do the thing or to be in a middle space where, like, I know enough to get this done without being perfect, you knowing it perfectly to get it done. This one is really related to what I call the fear of the mystery, and we'll do a whole class just on that itself. But the fear of being in the mystery, the fear of not knowing, which is actually very related to the fear of death itself, right? Death is the ultimate mystery. Fear number four, fear is a fear of success. So at first this one might sound funny, right? We all want success. And our clients do. You can be scared of something and want it at the same time, right? But just check this out for yourself for a moment. Do you have any preconceived notions, negative notions, of what it means to be successful? Do you have any judgments around what kind of people successful people are, what their personalities are like, what they have to do or sacrifice or become in order to get there, like any negativity around that. Some people, you know, for some people this isn't a thing at all, but for other people there's a fear of success because of all of the negative connotations that they have around it. Next fear to be aware of, the fear of being seen and being visible. Again, you know, especially for people that are more entrepreneurial, we want to be seen and visible. Or I guess, you know, it's accurate to say that as we step into bigger places and leadership for ourselves, naturally we become more seen and visible. But perhaps there's a part of you that really, even though it really longs to be seen and feels the need to be seen, there's also a part that's terrified of visibility. Terrified maybe that then you'll be much more open to criticism, or that you'll have to stand up and defend yourself, your values, your work. Or maybe you're scared that if you're seen, you'll look too big. And other people might think, who does she think she is? Next fear of not deserving what you want. So some people have a fear, this is also a belief, I guess you can say, that the thing that they want, they don't deserve to have it. It's really so great if as a coach, if that's going on, you know, that you can help clients become aware of that one. So the fear can sound something like this. I just don't deserve to have a great relationship, or I don't deserve to have a thriving business, or I don't deserve to get my book published. Of course, a client is never going to outright say that. With this one, the fear of not deserving what you want, I mean, same with all of them, but particularly with this one, it's not conscious. It's really not conscious. They don't realize that they don't think they deserve it, right? But when you can illuminate that for them, there's so much that can then happen for them. Fear number 7, fear of losing connection with yourself or with loved ones. Fear of losing connection with self or loved ones. This is another one that might not be obvious right away. But, for example, do you have any fear that if you really achieve what you want, you'll become so busy that you'll get carried away by the work or the fame or get lost in the work, and then you won't have time for you, or you won't be as connected with yourself, or you won't be as connected with the people that you love anymore, or somehow you'll lose your true self or outgrow a loved one. Oftentimes, again, remember what I said, these are underlying fears, not the surface fear. Someone might be sabotaging, you know, their business, but the underlying fear might be that there's a fear of losing connection with self or loved ones. Next one, which is related, fear of surpassing loved ones. This is one that I've had to work on personally a lot in my life. So this fear revolves around a parent or parental figure, a sibling, a mentor, a friend, an employer who you feel so incredibly loyal to, that there's a part of you that fears that if you create what you want, achieve what you want, whatever it is, in any area, that you'll achieve more than this person has, and thereby defy or break an unspoken code or rule between the two of you. And the rule or the code is that you can't get more than the other one. So instead, you hold yourself back consciously or not so that you don't get more successful in any area than them or a particular area. And the next fear, fear of having money or fear of not having money. They're both the same, different sides of the same coin. So oftentimes that can be an underlying fear. And again, you know, easy to understand the fear of not having money, but I have actually seen the fear of having money be just as strong, if not stronger, for some people because of all of the ideas that they might have about people that have money or the responsibility that you have when you have money or, you know, any of that. And then fear 10 and fear number 11 oftentimes go together too. And those are the fears of getting hurt and the fear of not being liked or having others get angry at you. So they can sound something like, if I put myself out there and really ask for the rates that I want, people will get angry at me or people will laugh at me because it's so preposterous. Or they'll reject me. If I do this, whatever this is, I'm going to get rejected. All right, so let's do a little bit of, go a little bit deeper into this and just do a little bit of inner work. I'm going to ask you some journaling questions. We're going to go through them pretty quickly. So we'll get started on them now. There's still more that I want to share today, but you may want to go back to these for homework too. All right, first question, what's a goal that you're wanting to achieve right now that is in arrested development in one way or another? Either you haven't been moving on it at all, or you've been moving on it but not really giving it what it requires, or you've been sabotaging. What's a goal that you're wanting to achieve right now that's in arrested development? And, well, I don't know. You can see for yourself, like, it might be that something dialed in will be more valuable for you to explore than something just big in general, like success in my business, that might not be dialed in enough. Maybe it's about just built like that next goal in your business or in your relationship or in your health, whatever, you know, whatever it is, in your home. The next question, what would be at risk for you if you were to really pursue or achieve this goal? What would be at risk for you if you were to really pursue or achieve this goal? What relationship or sense of self or habit or pattern or idea would be at risk for you? I want to give you a little bit of time with this one because sometimes there are pieces that we're scared of risking that we don't even realize. Next question. Write down all of the symptom fears that come up when you think about taking action towards this goal. You can almost have like two columns. On one hand is the kind of the symptom fears, and the other column is what are some of the underlying fears. So a symptom fear might be, you know, I'm scared of raising the rates, I'm scared of telling this particular client that the rates are changing at the end of the whatever. I'm scared to utter the words of the rate, you know, whatever it is. Maybe the underlying fear is the fear of having money or the fear of being rejected, you know, the fear of surpassing a loved one, whatever it is. So what are the symptom fears and what's the underlying fear or fears? All right, and then last question, this may have already come up in a couple ways so far, but just in case, I'm going to ask you, so what are the behaviors that the fear causes you to act out? How does the fear manifest in terms of action or inaction, in terms of thoughts and emotions? What are the behaviors? What behaviors does your fear cause you to feel and to act out? Or not act out? All right. Any questions before we move on the 11 underlying fears? Okay. I want to hear what came through in your journaling, but we'll save it for the end because there's still another piece that I want to make sure we get to today. So I want to outline now, we've done all the prep work, now I can really outline for you the process of befriending your fear. I'll outline it for you today, and then in next week's recording, we'll actually get into each of the pieces, and I'll take you through the process itself. So in a way, we've already started to touch on step one and step two of the process. So step one, help your clients become aware of their fears. You can't make friends with anything unless you're aware of it, right? So the more that you can help your clients become clear on what their fears are, and how those fears play out in their business, then the more you can bring the fear out of the blind spot, where that's when fears can do the most damage, when they're in the blind spot, and help bring them into the light for your clients. So step one is helping them become aware of the fear. And then step two is helping them understand the fear, to get a better understanding, to see it for what it is, to see how the fear works in their life, to see how they react to their fears, to see when the fears show up, to see maybe what triggers particular fears. So the journaling questions that we just did are kind of like, I mean, you wouldn't necessarily duties in this order with clients, you know, be more organic. I was doing some fishing for you, you know, without it coming up organically in a conversation. But the questions that I just went through are really about step one and step two. Another really great tool for step two for helping clients understand their fears is for them, once you've brought awareness to it and helped them understand a little bit how those fears come up in their life and their reactions, is to have your client track the fear as it comes up for a week or 2 weeks. Because the more that you can track it in your life, like in real time, once you become aware of it, number one, you're just going to continuously be bringing it out of that blind spot, which is going to help so much. But if that's part of that process of becoming friends with it more, just being able to see it. So in your homework sheet today, you've got this assignment, you know, if you want to take it on for yourself, whatever came through in the journaling, you know, for you to pick one of the fears that really affect you the most. And I've got a tracker for you in there. What oftentimes will happen when you start to track fears is that in the beginning you may not notice it in the moment, right? So I would say, like, at the end of every day, review the day and see, okay, when did this fear come up? What triggered it? I've got all different questions, you know, how did it happen? What were the results, right? But once you start doing this for a few days, you're going to start noticing in the moment and in the moment and in the moment. It's pretty amazing. All right, so step three, after you've helped the client become aware of the fear and then understand the fear, then step three is dialoguing with the fear. And again, in next week's recording, I'll really be teaching you how to do that, how to really dialogue with it. You're going to learn how to speak with the fears and how to help your clients speak with their fears. When you can dialogue with the fear, you learn a lot more about how the fears work inside of you. You move them even further out of the blind spot. And even more important, when you dialogue with the fear, you learn how the fear has been serving you. So probably if you're in this program, you know this already, your fears have actually been serving you. They've been doing something for you. You're a very smart person, and you wouldn't be holding on to something so tightly if it wasn't serving you in one way or another, right? Like, that's the thing that you don't want to risk. So if you find that you're holding on to a persistent fear, chances are that it's serving you in some way. The dialoguing, the step three, the dialoguing with the fears is really kind of the heart of befriending the fear. When you're willing to dialogue with the fear, to engage with it, and maybe even through the dialogue honor the fear and love the fear instead of hating on it, rejecting it, fighting it, that's when you actually start becoming friends with it. And that's when it can just start to diminish a bit more. Because when you do this, when you dialogue and make the friends, then the fear doesn't have to be like the man who's fighting against the wind to keep his hat on. The fear can relax a little bit, or like what Tina said, quiet a little bit, because it knows that it's not being ignored or hated. The fear knows then that it's going to get the loving attention that it deserves, and so then it doesn't have to be so big anymore, in your face so much anymore. Step four is connect to spirit, trust, and love. So once you've dialogued with the fear, it's important to connect to spirit, trust, love, either all of them or one of them, you know, whatever is going to resonate for you or resonate for your client. In order to really walk with fear and really befriend it, it's important to also hold trust and love alongside the fear. So what happens for most people is that there's either fear or trust. They don't even realize that this happens, that it's like either fear or trust or either fear or love, but they can't exist for a lot of people in the same sphere, or people don't realize that they can exist in the same sphere. And that's when we can't be friends with the fear, and that's when it sabotages. But if you can actually hold the fear while also holding trust and love, then the fear doesn't have to dictate so much. The trust can be in yourself, in spirit, universe, whatever works for you. In order to really believe that the risk is worth it, like fully, 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 there has to be trust, right? Back to the edge of the cliff, you see the other side, right? Step one is like, okay, you become aware of the fear, right? The fear of jumping. You're like, you see what there is to risk. You can understand it. You can dialogue with the fear. It all starts to make more sense, but then there has to be the trust and the love. Next step, which is step five, is, you know, once you've really brought that trust and love, in, you know, once you see everything from steps one through three, made the friends, brought the trust and love in, that's when your client is actually able and equipped to make a different choice, to choose to walk a different path, to choose that, to go after what they want. Until you get to this step, you haven't really had the choice to move beyond the fear because you haven't embraced it. Because when you're not aware of the fear, then you think all of you is the fear. You literally are the fear. You're not separate from it. It's in your blind spot because you're not aware of it and you don't see yourself as separate from it. You can't choose to overcome it, to move beyond it, to make a different choice, to walk a different path, unless you see that it's not all of you. And then finally, step six is committing and recommitting to the new path. So back to breakthrough versus transformation, you know, which you've heard me say so many times, really like steps one through four are about breakthroughs, are about new awarenesses. They're starting to get into the transformation, which is about applying the breakthrough, the new awareness persistently and consistently to create real change, right? So step six is about that. There's a quote from John Assaraf that goes like this. When you're interested in something, you'll do what's convenient. When you're committed to something, you'll do whatever it takes. When you're interested in something, you'll do what's convenient. When you're committed to something, you'll do whatever it takes. And this is so much about what the commitment and the recommitment is. Like I started this class off, this is a process. It's not a once and done. It's great to move through a client, and you can move a client through steps one, through five in a single session. I do it in a 45-minute session for sure. But step six, it needs to happen for it to become real change. And the step six, you know, it's going to vary client to client, but for some, it's about them going back to the dialoguing with the fear, you know, a number of times, either with you or on their own. It's going to come back to, you know, the tracking. It's going to come back to really being conscious of the choosing the different path over and over and over again, really being conscious of bringing the trust and the love in. Even when they feel like it's not there, they're probably going to have to work on it for a couple of weeks at least. I mean, you'll be able to see changes right away after the one session. They might be able to move forward with certain actions, you know, et cetera. But the deeper patterning, there needs to be some of the commitment and the recommitment and the recommitment there. Okay, so that's as much content as I'm going to give you today because it's been a lot. Your homework, I'm going to tell you your homework for this week, and then I think we'll still have some time for sharing. The other thing I'm going to say is just like change is a process, learning the befriend your fear process is a process. I don't expect you to like have all the information integrated inside of you. I know I gave you a lot today. Really allow yourself to do the homework to really be in it. So you've got a homework sheet, resource sheet, there's some of the pieces I covered today, and then you've got the tracker. So I really want to encourage you to track yourself over the next week or two. It's really interesting what can come out of it. If you didn't get to move through all of the journaling questions fully, move through the journaling questions. If you're working with a coaching partner, you know, after next week's call, you can start practicing the full process, but if you're going to meet with your partner this week, you know, you can bring forward some of the fears that came up and just use all of the foundational skills that you've already had so far in this training to pick at things and work through them. All right, so before we wrap for today, any questions that you have for me or takeaways or what you're seeing, what can I help you with or what would you love to share about what you're receiving? Dana.
Hey, Joanna.
Hi.
So definitely a lot to process from this. I'm trying to see what even to share, but this has been by far the most impactful call for me.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm realizing is, like, I teach meditation because that is the tool that's helped me the most. So a lot of this stuff is very familiar just through the path of mindfulness and, you know, that realm. But what I'm noticing for myself, and I think this has been the block in me growing a business, is, like, when you had us check in with, a goal that we've been, like, stuck around. Mm-hmm. So my goal is to leave my day job and have my own business. And that's been my goal for like, I feel like 8 years now, like 5 years now. I've always had a day job and then I do my side hustle that doesn't really make a ton of money. And I'm noticing that it's like, I know a lot of this and I see a lot of my fears, but I'm not pushing to the next level of actually like taking different action to like move towards my goals.
Yeah.
And because I'm stuck there, I have a lot of fear around helping clients reach goals. That's why I don't offer like programs because I'm always scared I won't be able to help them get a result. So I'm always offering like one-off sessions and, you know, things that I don't have to hold a container to get people to the next level and create these like transformational experiences. And I'm realizing that it's starting with me and like me taking the action. So that's like my aha right now.
Yeah, I got chills when you said that. That feels so big, Dana, and so like so important. I'm so glad you can see it. And I really want you to track, like, pick the fear that feels the biggest around starting the business. If you're not sure, go back to the journaling questions and really commit every day to tracking it. Mm-hmm. That's going to be an important next step for you. I'm really interested to see what's going to evolve from that.
All right. Awesome. Thank you so much.
Yeah, you're welcome. Good stuff. Sophie.
Hi. I have a little bit of a question around the step after the tracking. There's either fear or trust that things will work out right, bring the love and trust in. I need a little bit of explanation on that. Like, how, like for example, like, how would you, like, is this kind of like normalizing a little bit?
A little bit. So in next week's call, I'm going to like get into all the nitty gritties, but
okay.
Let me answer a little bit for now so I don't keep you hanging. So what oftentimes happens is that when the fear is in our blind spot, we make the fear, or when we haven't befriended the fear yet, we make, without even realizing it and without even wanting to, we make the fear bigger and more powerful and more important than our trust that we can achieve and that our love and desire for the goal. But once you move through the first steps to understand the fear and you'll be aware of the fear and understand the fear and dialogue with the fear, then you can much more clearly say, what do I want to make more important here? The fear, which is what I've been doing up until now. I've been making that the all-powerful thing, maybe even without realizing it. Or am I going to put more energy and focus into the trust and the love? And if you can make that choice, that will help you then get over the hump to take actions and to choose that next path, which is step five. Does that help? Does that make more sense?
Yeah, that helps a lot.
Okay, good. That's a good question. Okay, and Kalea. Kalea, are you there?
Can you hear me?
Oh, yeah, no, I can hear you.
I'm sorry, I had myself muted. Okay, I'll be quick because I know we're almost done with time. A lot came up for me. I was surprised. I was like, holy mackerel, a lot of what you, and I, it was interesting while you were writing it, I wasn't like in fear while I was, it was interesting not being in fear of noticing there was so much fear, which I thought was kind of interesting. But I was like, wow, a lot of those really landed for me. But the really huge one that is so big that I was like, oh my God, this has been going on for probably 20 years in my business, right? Let me see if I can put it into words. The long and short of it is that, like, why haven't I really scaled and, like, gone the way I want to with the skills that I have and the reach that I have? And I saw what, and you probably are going to go, oh, my God, I know, I've seen this, like, before. But I have never really seen this until now, which is that all of the marketing stuff that I will resist doing, mm-hmm. is, and I'll get distracted or I'll be like, oh, my God, no, that's not right for that. That niche isn't this or that. It's totally and entirely because of the fear that no matter what I say, I'm not really going to be heard. Mm-hmm. And the truth is that I'm not clear enough to really speak directly to the person so that they'll see my true power. And if they don't see my true power, I won't really be able to fully help. So, well, then what's the point?
Yep.
That's huge.
That's so big. And it feels like there's a combo of two things in there, like the fear of not being good enough in articulating yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And then
yeah.
as a result of that, the fear of being rejected, right? Because unseen is a version of that.
Yeah.
And so what's been happening for you is because of those two fears, you just haven't really been doing, like, you know, let's give you credit. Like, you have been doing marketing, but you haven't really been doing the marketing that you know is required. And also that I know you can get excited about doing.
Oh, I know. It's true. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
This is huge.
Yeah. That's so really big. So track it. Track it this year.
Okay.
See as it comes up this week.
Okay.
Use the tracker. Okay.
Thank you. Okay.
You're welcome. All right, everyone. I hope you take all of the content from today's call and just kind of enjoy going deeper with it, process it. If any questions come up, let me know. You'll be getting the part two recording next Wednesday. I'm going to be out of the office for spring break, but I've got that for you. I'll probably be checking in here and there in the Facebook group. If any questions come up, I'm definitely here the rest of the week. So enjoy, and I will talk to you very soon. Have a great rest of your day.
The moderator has left the conference.